अन्याभिलाषिता शून्यम् ज्ञानकर्मादिनावृतम् आनुकूल्येन कृष्णानु शीलनं भक्तिरुत्तमा.
About something once the emphasis is lost, after a few days we'll forget that we're supposed to memorize, so might as well do it now. So please chant. Translation again. When first class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires. Knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy and fruitive action. The devotee must constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. So I think most of you have these pages that were circulated in the last 2 days. If any of you have come late and you don't have it, you can just borrow it from someone and have it photocopied. So we'll continue the discussion, but before that we'll just revise a little bit of what we did, what we discussed yesterday. On the first day, we basically talked about the importance of this verse. We mentioned the two characteristics, the primary characteristics, the Swarup Lakshan, and the marginal characteristics, the Tatastha Lakshan. The Swarup Lakshan identifies the nature of ordinary bhakti, and the marginal characteristics, they qualify that ordinary bhakti. They add some special qualities to this ordinary bhakti to make it what? Pure bhakti or pure devotional service. So this definition, as we have seen, is very complete. It is precise. It is neither too limiting nor is it too extensive. Srila Rupa Goswami in his genius has precisely chosen every alphabet properly. So having discussed the primary characteristics on the first day, what are the primary characteristics? Who remembers? What's the line? Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam, which has three parts, which are Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam. And we discussed how each of these words is important to make the subject of bhakti very, very clear. Then yesterday we focused on the first of the marginal characteristics, which is Anyabhilashita Shunyam. And this has how many parts? Nadita. Anya, Abhilashita, and Shunyam. So, who would like to explain in brief the significance of this Anya Abhilashita Shunyam? First of all, let's begin by asking a few questions. How do we define a material desire? What is a material desire? Yes. Any desire other than a desire to please Krishna and to serve Krishna, very correct, is material desire. Any desire to serve our own senses is material desire. And any desire to please Krishna, to serve Him favorably, is bhakti, leads us to prema. So then, what next did we discuss after that? What was the point? That if we take this as a definition, of pure devotional service, that one should not have any material desires, one should not at any point in time have any desires that are not exclusively meant for pleasing Krishna, then that is not pure devotional service. So, is this valid or is it not valid?
We added a qualification to it because it becomes very exclusive if we don't have the qualification. And the qualification that we added was the nature of desire. So, we have the
intention.
So, Anya Vilashita as opposed to Anya Vilasha.
Okay, if you make it Abhilasha, which means desire, it becomes too exclusive. And what is this implication of it being too exclusive? No, what is the implication? Okay, the definition is exclusive. So is there anything that's wrong with that? It excludes many, many pure devotees. It excludes practically all the pure devotees. Even the Brajabasis called out to Krishna in emergency. Kunti Maharani and her sons, the Pandavas, called out to Krishna. So everyone would be excluded from this definition. So therefore, Rupa Goswami has not used the word Anya Abhilasha, which means other desire. Rather, he has used the word Abhilashita. What is the meaning of Abhilashita as opposed to Abhilasha?
Nature.
The nature. The nature of what?
Desire.
Desiring what? The nature of desiring something other than that which is meant for pleasing Krishna. That Abhilasha, Anya Abhilasha, other desire. The nature of desiring something Anya, something different from what is meant for Krishna's pleasure exclusively. So one may incidentally have, as a result of some emergency, dire situation connected to self-preservation, some desire that may not be meant exclusively for pleasing Krishna, but if one doesn't have the nature of always desiring something separate from Krishna, if it is contrary to one's devotional nature, then such emergency desires meant for one's preservation, one's survival and so on, are not to be considered a fault on one's bhakti. It's not to be considered a blemish. It does not go against the principle of pure devotional service. Right? So who would like to explain this? You know, the best way to understand something is to teach it. The best way to test yourself if you really understood something is to speak it out. So the example of Draupadi was given, that's right, that she called out to Krishna to save her honor, but it was not her nature to ask for things that are not for Krishna's pleasure. It was not her nature. Her nature was to always serve Krishna. Draupadi was a pure devotee of Krishna. She always desired to serve Krishna favorably, 24 hours a day. But by Krishna's own arrangement, the Pandavas were put into such dire straits that practically every day, that they were forced to take shelter of Krishna. So Draupadi's calling out for Krishna is still within the realm of pure devotional service, although, technically speaking, strictly speaking, from the point of view of this world, saving one's honor for a lady, however grave the issue may be, is still something material. It's not connected to the soul. It's still connected to the body. But because the overall nature of Draupadi is that she is a completely surrendered, pure devotee of Krishna, therefore such desires in an emergency situation do not go contrary to the principle of pure devotional service. So this is why we have the difference between an Abhilasha and Abhilashita. So one should not have the date of the desire, the nature of petitioning Krishna again and again for something that is not meant for his service or for his pleasure. That is the point. So when Rupa Goswami says Anya Abhilashita Shunyam, the Shunyam or the zero is not meant for the Abhilasha, the desire, is meant for the Anya. It's not that Rupa Goswami says the desires must be zero. No. Desires cannot be zero because the spirit soul is not dead. The spirit soul is always conscious. A conscious living entity always has thoughts, has desires. You cannot artificially negate thoughts as the Mayavadis want to do. The Mayavadis, they try to become thoughtless and then they realize that they're becoming thoughtless. That's a contradiction in itself, isn't it? Then you're thinking that I am thoughtless. So it doesn't make sense. One cannot be thoughtless. But there will be thoughts, there will be desires. But those desires must be favorably directed towards pleasing Krishna and serving Him. That's the point. So in this way, we talked about the first marginal characteristic of bhakti, that we should become free from the propensity to ask Krishna for things that are material or things that are not connected to his service or pleasure. Now, yesterday I think there were some questions at the end and then we could not finish it because the arati began. So for a few minutes, if there were any questions pertaining to yesterday's discussion, we'll continue. Yesterday there was one question about preaching, that if we encounter a person, we are preaching to that person, and that person has many material desires or is in some difficulty and is not in a position to listen to any philosophy about pure devotion. So should we tell that person about the highest principle of pure devotion, or should we say that, well, come to Krishna and your desires will be fulfilled? That was one question yesterday, wasn't it? So I had given the example of Narad Muni preaching to Dhruva Maharaj. And when he saw that Dhruva Maharaj was not in a position to listen to any higher instruction, then he satisfied him and said, all right, you want a kingdom? Here, chant this mantra, go ahead. But because he contacted Krishna, his material desires were purified. So I'd like to add one or two sentences to this, that initially we should judge the person we are preaching to. If that person is receptive to the principle of pure devotional service, we should certainly say that. Even if the person is not in a position to listen or accept it, we can say it and then say, well, that's the standard. But even then, just come to Krishna, doesn't matter. Even if you're not able to come up to the standard, just come and chant Hare Krishna. Also, when we talk of highest devotional standards, we should know that all the time we preach about going back to Godhead, getting out of this material world and going back to Godhead. Isn't that what we talk about all the time? So is that pure devotional service? What do you think? Going back to Godhead is pure devotional service or not? Think. Depends on the intention. Please elaborate.
Or if someone wants to go just because he suffers so much that he can't bear it anymore, He wants to find a pleasurable, comfortable situation, then it's wrong. But if he wants to go back and join Krishna's eternal pastime, then it could be more fluid.
Very nice. Excellent. If our desire to go back to Godhead is based on the fact that I don't want to pay my taxes anymore, I don't want to go to hospital anymore, I don't want to get hungry anymore, I want to be relieved of the suffering of this world and I want to enjoy happily forever, then that desire to go back to Godhead is mixed with our own personal motivation. I want to be free from suffering. It's not Krishna. It's got nothing to do with Krishna. Krishna is incidental. Because I can be in that situation only with Krishna, so then I'm bringing Krishna into my program of life. But otherwise, my goal is I want to be free from suffering. Well, to start with, that's good. At least we're starting with that understanding, so people understand that this world is a place of suffering. So when we preach, and even at an everyday level in our discussions, even in Srimad Bhagavatam class, we may talk about this, no problem. But yet, we should understand the higher principle. There was Vasudev Datta. He was such a great devotee of the Lord. He agreed to take on the sins of all the living entities in the universe, even if it meant that the enormous burden of the sin would keep him in hell forever. Vasudev Datta happily agreed to the idea. In fact, he offered it. And his point was that if all the other living entities in the universe can be benefited by eternal life, and the price for that is that one worthless soul like me has to be in hell, it's an insignificant price to pay. So I'm very happily willing for that. Also, the principle of bhakti at a higher level is that we do not even seek liberation. Krishna will give it. Or Krishna may not give it also. But we are not concerned. Our concern is not these forms of liberation. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third canto, Kapiladev explains, Ahaituki avyavahita sa bhaktihi purushottame salokya sarshti samipya sarupya ekatvam ati uta diyamanam na grihananti vina matsevanam janaha. The meaning of this verse is, bhakti towards Purushottam or Lord Krishna has to be ahituki and avyavahita. Ahituki means without any material motivation, that is anyabhilashita shunyam. And avyavahita means it should be without cessation, without interruption. That means jnana karmadyanavritam, which is a second characteristic which we're going to talk about shortly. And then he says, there are five kinds of liberation. Who knows the five kinds of liberation? Anyone? I mention it in this verse that I quoted. First, salokya. What's the meaning of salokya? Loka means planet. Salokya means that we get the liberation and stay on the same planet as the Lord in the spiritual world. Second, sarupya. Rup means form. So we get a form similar to the Lord's. Third, sarshti. What does it mean? To get the kind of opulences and powers as the Lord. Fourth, samipya. What does that mean? To be very close to the Lord, to be one of the Lord's associates. Not just to stay on the same planet, but to be in his inner circle. Very, very close to the Lord. And what's the fifth one? Sayujya or ekatva. What is that? Merging into the impersonal Brahman. The impersonal effulgence of Lord Krishna. The fifth one, the devotees never want, certainly. But even the first four ones, Kapiladev says, diyamanam na grihananti vina matsevanam janaha. Kapiladev says that if I give these five kinds of liberation to my devotees, even if I give it, they don't accept it. If there is no opportunity for service to the Lord, to me, Kapiladev says. In other words, we don't even want to go back to Godhead if there's no chance of doing service over there. Of course, going back to Godhead, we will do service, but the point is that it is service that is important. It is a desire to please Krishna that is important. It's not going back to Godhead that is important. Therefore, what has Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said in the Shikshashtakam? Who remembers? Na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam vacha gadish kamaye mama janmani janmanishvare bhavatat bhaktir ahaituki tvai. This is anyabhilashita shunyam. He says, I don't want wealth, I don't want beautiful women, I don't want followers, I don't want even liberation from material existence. Birth after birth, I simply want your uninterrupted, unmotivated devotional service. That's all I want. So this is pure devotional service. So Mahaprabhu here has also indicated that we don't want even liberation. Even Vaishnava liberation, we are not so much concerned with. So therefore, we are talking of three platforms now. The first platform is the highest platform. We are not concerned with liberation. We are only concerned with purely trying to serve Krishna and trying to please Him. It doesn't matter where we are, in hell, on earth, in London, or in Vrindavan, or in Goloka Vrindavan. It doesn't matter. We simply want to serve as per His desire. Slightly lower is, well, let's get out of this material world and go back to Goloka and live eternally with Krishna. That's also an acceptable platform. And a slightly lower platform is, doesn't matter if you have material desires, but come to Krishna. Worship Krishna. Krishna will purify you. So like that, there are different platforms at which we can understand these things. So in any case, this is how we see the principle. We have such a lofty principle, such a sublime, high ideal. But we shouldn't become disheartened thinking, oh, it's too high for me, might as well give it up. You know, there was a... You all heard the Trinadapi Shunichena Shloka, isn't it? Trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Where Mahaprabhu says that one must become humbler than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, be willing to offer respect to others and not expecting any respect for oneself. And at one time, there is a little Bengali verse about this. There was a poet who wanted to know what is a Vaishnava. So he came. And he said, Vaishnav ho ar mone chilo shad, trinadapi shlok shune pode galo bad. He said, I have a long time nurtured the desire to want to be a Vaishnav. But when I heard this trinadapi shloka, I said, forget it. It's not for me. Humbler than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, what next? Offer all respect to others. Sorry. Can't do all this. So like that, we shouldn't think, oh, anyabhilashita shunya, my God, that's too much. And this, I think, might as well forget. No. We should just continue on. And devotees actually make more advancement than they think. Many times devotees say, you know, I've been chanting Hare Krishna for so long, but I am where I was 15 years ago. No, we are not. We are making advancement. But because we are so close to ourselves, so we don't realize it. Everybody else notices how a child is growing except the child. Others see the child. The child is not seeing himself, so he doesn't know how he's growing. So we are making progress. And of course, a sincere devotee always tries to prosecute Krishna consciousness very, very nicely, sincerely. So that's the point. Any other questions before we go on to the other marginal characteristic pertaining to yesterday? Yesterday's discussion, yes. The question is that when we read Krishna book, we get pleasure. So we're reading for our pleasure. So is that pure devotional service? You see, it's not a crime in devotional service to be happy. It's natural. It's a natural consequence of being Krishna conscious. Such is the nature of devotional service that when you read Krishna book, you feel happy. And we read it because Prabhupada has told us, you must read every day my books. My only complaint, Prabhupada said, is my devotees don't read my books. So we are reading it because Prabhupada wants us to read it. We are reading these books because Krishna wants us to read it. Krishna wants us to always hear about Him, talk about Him, remember Him. So because we are following obediently, we get the mercy, we get that pleasure. There are many people who read these things, but they don't experience the joy. There are mundane scholars who try to analyze the Srimad Bhagavatam in so many ways. But they are mundane scholars. Their motivation for reading is different. So certainly, if you feel pleasure in reading Krishna book, go ahead, read more. It's certainly pure devotional service. But if there's some important service coming up, sorry, I'm reading Krishna book, I can't come. No, that shouldn't be. If there's some urgent service that comes up, then we must be willing to sacrifice our little pleasure for another service which may be more pleasing to Krishna. Although both is devotional service. Both are devotional service, but we have to judge what's more important at a given point in time and then do it accordingly. But yes, as a regular routine, it is very important for devotees to study Srila Prabhupada's books every day. This will give us the higher taste. It will give strength to our mind and keep us strong and convinced on this path. Side by side, we should do our sadhana also very nicely. Yes.
Swami, you were mentioning about Vasudeva Tattva.
Yes.
How he accomplished level 106 for him to conduct the hell for the rest of his life.
Yes.
I was arguing with someone else one day, and do you really think he was arguing that that is not charity because he gains pleasure by actually taking on other people's sins? So he's not. He may not be helping others, but he is actually doing it for his pleasure. And he was explaining about the concept of pleasure, you know, the pleasure concept. So I'm a bit confused.
Vasudev Datta did not do that for his own pleasure. He did it out of his overwhelming compassion. When he saw the intense suffering of the living entities conditioned in this material world, that offer came from that compassion. Well, it is natural. It's not that, as I was mentioning earlier, it's not wrong to feel happy. It's the nature of the soul to be happy, after all. But because we are seeking happiness in the wrong things, therefore we are suffering. So we see, actually, it's a fact that when you try to serve, you get more happiness than when you receive service. So therefore, Vasudev Datta's offer stemmed from a very deep compassion in his heart. Yes, Madhu.
I was thinking that the same duty for our poor will be pleasing Krishna, and that's the certain Krishna. But when we are not in the situation with the associating with the devotee or on a situation or work situation, when we are not a sort of, you know, associated with the people who are not Krishna conscious. What is the situation? I mean, we're not talking about Krishna. This is a different situation. So it's not pleasing to Krishna.
The question is that when we are in the association of non-devotees, then we're not talking about Krishna and the situation is not pleasing to Krishna. Well, Rupa Goswami has advised us that we should try to maximize our association with devotees and minimize our association with non-devotees. Now, a certain degree of association with non-devotees is inevitable in this world for the sake of survival. You have to earn your livelihood or for some other practical reason, or for even for preaching's sake. When our devotees go out on the streets to distribute books, they're interacting with non-devotees. So we have to do certain things in life that are inevitable. So what we should do is to keep ourselves spiritually very strong by following Srila Prabhupada's program of hearing and chanting and so on. And then we will be able to protect ourselves rather from the bad influence of the association of non-devotees. So what we'll do now is we'll go on to the next, second marginal characteristic, which is jnana karma adi anavritam. Jnana karma adi anavritam. The first characteristic was that one's devotional service should be free from these material desires or the propensity to want to ask Krishna for something that's not for his service. And the second is that bhakti should not be covered over by jnana, karma, etc. The word avaran in Sanskrit means a covering or a curtain. Avrit means to be covered over. Anavrit means to be not covered by. So the word anavritam is that it should not be covered by. By what? Jnana, karma, adi. By three things. Jnana in general means knowledge. But here we are not talking of ordinary knowledge. We are not talking of knowledge that pertains to Krishna, his beautiful form, his name, his qualities, his pastimes, his fame, his abode and so on. The kind of knowledge that leads us to bhakti, that leads us to love Krishna, that knowledge is required. But that kind of knowledge, that kind of philosophical speculation that leads us to a conclusion that everything is zero, voidism, or to the conclusion that the Lord is impersonal, he is just some light, God is not a person. That kind of philosophical speculation, that process of acquiring knowledge is what is harmful to our bhakti, that covers over our bhakti. Now there is this kind of religious processes or philosophies that advocate paths like this have become very fashionable. For example, Buddhism has become very fashionable now. From Hollywood stars to everyone wants to follow Buddhism. It's very convenient because it sounds non-sectarian. It sounds so vague that anyone can do. It's practically not like a religion. You're talking of some void. You're talking of some new age concept, some reincarnation and something thrown in together. So Buddhism is actually an atheistic religion. It's not actually religion also. It's voidism, shunyavad. They say there is no reality, nothing exists. So any philosophical process that leads us to that conclusion may seem fashionable today, but it definitely is detrimental to our bhakti. Similarly, if people want to accept some ultimate reality, then they may follow the Mayavad process of Shankaracharya. That's also something that's fashionable because you don't have to have any particular God. It's all impersonal. It's all light. It's all vague. Anyone can believe it. So any sort of philosophical speculation that leads us to that conclusion covers over our bhakti. Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavan mam prapadyate vasudevah sarvamiti sa mahatma sudurlabhah. Krishna says that if after cultivating real knowledge for many lifetimes, one comes to the conclusion that Vasudev or Sri Krishna is the all-in-all and one surrenders to him and becomes his devotee, then that kind of process of knowledge is perfect. But if it leads us to the conclusion that everything is impersonal, then that covers over the bhakti. There is one devotee in ISKCON. He's a very senior devotee actually. Several years ago, at least 6 or 7 years ago, maybe more. Yeah, 5 years ago. I was having a chat with him and he was revealing his mind. And he was saying that before he became a devotee, he joined ISKCON, he was going to some Mayavadi spiritual organization where they were teaching that the absolute truth is impersonal. It's just some light. And he was frequenting that place and trying to absorb that philosophy and that whole process of logic and the reasoning, the philosophy. And he says, now I've been 25 years in ISKCON. I'm chanting 16 rounds every day. I give class on the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. I am preaching. I am doing everything. But sometimes I'm haunted by the idea, is God really personal? Can God really be a person? Philosophically, logically, sometimes a thought comes out to haunt him again because he's so accustomed to the idea from his early days that the Absolute Truth cannot be a person. It has to be impersonal. And the logic, that logic sometimes shakes up his conviction. Maybe not in a serious way, but it does certainly cause some agitation in mind. It's so dangerous. Listening to this kind of philosophical reasoning can be very, very detrimental. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has warned, Mayavadi bhashushunale hoy sarvanash. If one hears the Mayavad philosophy, then certainly one is doomed. There is a story which is told both in the Chaitanya Bhagavat and also the Chaitanya Charitamrita about Mukunda, the associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was also a very beautiful singer. Mahaprabhu used to love to listen to him singing. It was just simply nectarian. When Mahaprabhu had his Mahaprakash Leela, when he was offering all kinds of benedictions to his devotees, he didn't deliberately call Mukunda. He called everyone and fulfilled all their desires. But Mukunda didn't come forward on his own, and neither did Mahaprabhu call him up. After some time, after a lot of time had elapsed, Srivas Thakur went up to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and says, my dear Lord, what has Mukunda done? What is his offense? He is your life and soul, so why have you not called him up? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, don't even mention his name to me. On one hand, he comes in front of me with straw in his teeth, making a show of humility and agreeing to all the devotional conclusions of the Vaishnavas, singing kirtan and everything. And then afterwards, he comes and beats me with an iron rod. So Srivas Thakur said, my dear Lord, you know Mukunda, we know Mukunda. We do not see any offense on Mukunda's part. What is it that he has done that merits you taking such a harsh stand about him? So Mahaprabhu said, you see, this Mukunda, he goes to assemblies where the Yoga Vasishtha scripture or the book is discussed. Now the Yoga Vasishtha is a book that expounds Mayavadi conclusions. It essentially talks about how it concludes the philosophy or the line of reasoning and logic there comes to the conclusion that the Absolute is impersonal. So this Mukunda goes and listens to discourses that eventually lead to the point of impersonalism, and he agrees with everything. Then he comes here to the devotees, and when we speak about Krishna, he agrees to everything. So anyone who believes that there is any process superior to devotional service or bhakti is beating me with an iron rod. So therefore, I will not call Mukunda. So Mukunda was very sorry to hear this. And then he said, all right, if this is the way the Lord wants to shower his mercy on me. So he told Srivas Thakur, please ask the Lord, how long will it be before he will grant me his darshan, his audience again? So Srivas Thakur asked Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu said, tell Mukunda that for 10 million births I will not give him darshan. He will have to wait for 10 million births. So when Srivas Thakur told this to Mukunda, when he heard this, Mukunda started jumping and dancing in ecstasy. Only 10 million births, only 10 million births. So Mukunda's point was that I have to wait 10 million births, doesn't matter, but at least after that, the mercy of the Lord and the darshan of the Lord is assured. It's certain because the Lord has said it himself. So in any case, this is a wonderful pastime. Mahaprabhu, of course, called him and embraced him after he heard that. and said, Mukunda, you are my eternal associate. How can I ever be angry with you? Your sweet singing melts everybody's hearts. I actually manifest on your tongue when you sing. So please stay here. Another instance comes to mind is Advaita Acharya himself. You see, Advaita Acharya always felt embarrassed that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu treated him like a guru. Advaita Acharya was about 50 years older than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was like a guru and a father. But nevertheless, Advaita Acharya wanted Mahaprabhu to treat him like a servant, to treat him like his disciple and follower, which Mahaprabhu would not do. He would always treat Advaita Acharya with too much respect. And Advaita Acharya was very, very uncomfortable with this. And he was hatching all kinds of plans to make Chaitanya Mahaprabhu treat him like a servant. Somehow he wanted Mahaprabhu to chastise him. Because only a master chastises a servant. So what could he do that would make Mahaprabhu really reprimand him? So he was thinking, then he said, yes. If I start expounding Yoga Vasishtha impersonal philosophy and start speaking on that logical, the line of reasoning that brings us to the point that the Lord is impersonal, then Mahaprabhu will be so angry with me that he will chastise me. And then he went around everywhere talking about impersonal philosophy. Haridas Thakur laughed because he knew what was in Advaita Acharya's mind. He didn't take him seriously. But one time, Mahaprabhu heard that Advaita Acharya is going around talking impersonal philosophy and giving people a line of reasoning like this. So Mahaprabhu took Haridas Thakur and said, I'm going to teach this Acharya a lesson. From Navadvip he came to Shantipur and he came to Advaita Acharya's house. And he said, so Acharya, please tell me, which is superior, the path of bhakti or the path of jnana? And Acharya replied immediately without hesitation, of course the path of jnana. The Lord is ultimately impersonal. And then he started giving all kinds of logic. And then Mahaprabhu couldn't tolerate it. So he pulled Advaita Acharya out into the courtyard and started beating him. And then Advaita Acharya's wife started becoming nervous. Even Haridas Thakur was a little fearfully chanting Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And his wife was saying, my Lord, what are you doing? He's an old Brahmana. He may die. And then you will repent that you killed an old Brahmana. Then Mahaprabhu stopped. And then he felt very ashamed. And Advaita Acharya was jubilant. Now his perfection of life was attained. Mahaprabhu had chastised him, which means that he accepted him as a servant. In any case, the point is that such logic is so harmful to bhakti. It completely covers bhakti, and as Mahaprabhu said, it's like striking the Lord with a